Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And it's time for the very first defensive review of the year. We're going to look back at the first preseason game against the Colts, talk about the Ravens' defensive performance, which was really something. And here to do that with me is Qadri Ismail. Qadri, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Thank you for having me on again.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk football. And anytime we can relate defense here to things that might have happened in that 2000 or 2001 season during the really glory days of the Ravens defense, it's always a lot of fun. And I appreciate you wanting to come on and talk some defense instead of necessarily offense, which I'm guessing would probably be your better choice of the two.
You know, it's interesting. As a football NFL analyst, you don't want to pigeonhole yourself and you want to look at the bigger portion of the game. And I think for me, doing it for what, going on two decades plus now, the entirety of the game, you better know. You don't want to just say, well, I'm a wide receiver and that's all we're going to talk about.
I think I could point to certain wide receivers that are sitting in chairs currently on various productions that would fall into that category, that they really don't feel comfortable talking about defensive linemen, say.
Yeah, you know, I think part of my journey from football player to analyst, but also, you know, as a coach, I remember Clarence Brooks when I was actually coaching my son's team at Patterson Mill High School. And I was trying to get the boys to understand footwork. And so we were down in Annapolis at one of the Ravens team practices, stadium practices. And Clarence and I were just having this conversation. And he was talking about how some of his defensive linemen over the years would just hone in on footwork alone. And that was like their biggest thing. They did not want to cross their foot over from one side to the other. And I thought about that. And I was like, boy, that's kind of eerily similar to a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. When we look at releasing off the line of scrimmage, we're always trying to attack half the defensive back. And mm-hmm. So when he started breaking it down, I was like, wow, this is just similar to playing wide receiver.
Sounds and like so pass rush, basically executing a half man move there.
Yeah, you know, it's all about leverage. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, it's whether you're pass rushing or trying to execute a stunt, you're just trying to put yourself in a position where you could gain leverage. I mean, this game is all about leverage, and the best you can do with your leverage is going to give you an advantage to win.
All right, let's dive into it. Real comfortable night at the ballpark. We've had rainy a number of times in recent years, and we certainly had hot, but this was one of the most comfortable nights I can ever remember. And you've got to take pleasure in the small things as they come along in life. It was a beautiful night. A awful passing game for the Ravens, propped up by the run game, the defense, and the special teams. So we get to talk about the fun side tonight with the defense. Believe me, we just did the offensive notes. There is not a lot to talk about in terms of that offense out there on the field. And then, of course, we're not going to get through this without talking about the injury to Kone. Just an awful, awful injury, just the way it looked, obviously, on TV, but also in terms of now what we know about it and how long he's likely to be out.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough injury. In my eye, I, you know, had the vantage point of, you know, looking at it down the line, and you could just see where his foot got tangled up, and the MCL kept on bending, and the MCL stabilizes your leg from bending in, and I think the mass and the force of the play, it just kept on going, which I'm sure put the pressure on the anterior cruciate ligament. And now you are looking at a season ending injury that for Kone, I know is going to be a hard road back, but gosh, you know, I know he's been on different podcasts and he's spoken about how, you know, he's had some tough challenges that he's had to overcome. And again, he's going to be faced with another set of tough challenges with that knee injury.
All right. Well, he definitely was part of what the Ravens were looking forward to in terms of the depth of the at cornerback. They have significant depth at cornerback, but they do have an issue with it. And it's not a 2025 issue, in my opinion, Kadri. It's more of a 2026 issue because their top four cornerbacks look terrific this year with Alexander and Awuzie and Wiggins and Humphrey. They're really set for this year, and they have good backups behind that. It's really going to be a question of who can even make the roster with Tampa and JAD and the two youngsters, Longer Beam and Kone. You know, going into last night, we're eight deep at trying to figure out what might be a six-man cornerback room. But now I see a little problem for 26. I see four guys who are leaving the team more than likely next year. Alexander, Awuzie, Armour Davis will all be UFAs. And then the team has to make a big decision on Marlon Humphrey, and they'll either have to pony up money for a new contract or probably let him go. And that's going to be a tough it'll be a tough contract for them to find room for, particularly if they can't get Lamar Jackson restructured.
Yeah, I think the elephant in the room is the restructuring of Lamar Jackson, because that kind of will set the table for everything moving forward. And I think, you know, for the rookies, obviously you don't know until they actually get out there in the line of fire and, you know, play some games and see how they adapt. But there's always free agency. There's always, you know, room to look at who's next. So while, yes, next year is something that can be a big concern, the here and now is also the concern, because you know that, yeah, you're just a injury away from being in a very, you know, precarious situation. So I think that the depth looks good short term. I think that, yes, as they move forward, you're going to see whether or not via free agency, via, you know, them trying to keep somebody a la Marlon Humphrey. But you're going to see that, yeah, it'll work itself out.
Okay. All right. You sound like a guy who only worries about this year's salary cap from the level of that response cue. And I'm not taking a swipe at you that way, but I like having you at all positions. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. No, I think that, for whatever the reason, like, people get so caught up in like next year. Mm-hmm. And then they're like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years down the line. And I sit there and like I scratch my head. I'm like, yeah, I get it and I appreciate it. But boy, you could have a flip of the script like real quick this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this year is what matters. And I think it was interesting when Steve Bisciotti did his interview at the owners meeting with John Harbaugh and Garrett Downings of their own TV production. Like, literally, he was like, look, I know I normally am all into, you know, draft capital and all that, but I want to win now. And I think for him to say that, you know, it's a look, this is all about now proposition. This isn't about somehow, some way figuring out, you know, draft capital and, you know, what salary cap is going to look like. And if he's saying that, I know, you know, the people that I've seen around town, you know, normally they would get all caught up in that. But people are talking about now, and it is a Super Bowl or bust type of a roster. So, yeah, I think I've shifted my focus from being, okay, well, you know, we got these young guys and how they're going to develop. I want to see TJ Tampa develop now. I know what we saw last year, that was good. as he sort of kind of came along from injury wise. I know we'll get into it with Adisa Isaac, but last year, you know, he was supposed to be, and then the hamstring and all that. Well, now he's on the field now. TJ Tapp is on the field now. I want to see that young man like grow up before our eyes and ball out now. So next year will take care of itself.
Okay. Well, all for that. And Tampa would be a part of both solutions potentially if he could play well this year, obviously, because he can. That would certainly mean he's good for next year and one of their younger corners who would still be here. Let's talk about something that shows up and often gets discussed and not really in any detail, but defenses in the preseason never show their hand. Okay. And one thing you'll see, and I think there are multiple reasons for this, but there's very little variation in defensive package from play to play. They play base, you know, they'll play a regular 3-4 base, and they'll play a standard nickel, two down linemen, two outside linebackers, two inside linebackers, and five defensive backs. But they won't give you any other package they look at in preseason. That's now been the trend for several years. They did pull out a few dime packages several years ago, I recall. Might have been under Martindale, or it might have been under McDonald. I'm not really sure. We were talking in our production meeting a little bit whether or not the 2000 Ravens did that at all. And honestly, I've got the video. I need to go back and look at it myself to see if Marvin Lewis, you know, the ultimate lover of 7DB packages, would have done a fair amount of that in the preseason. But I know it was it's not something that people remember. It's also not something I guess that people really care about that much.
Yeah, you know, I think some of maybe the historians of the game would really geek out on that. I think, you know, even if Marvin was on the line with us right now, he probably himself would be like, huh, I gotta look back on that because, huh. You know, yeah, from year to year, you're changing and adapting to your personnel. I think that Marvin was one of those coaches that, you know, looks at their personnel and tries to make it fit for what his philosophy is. And I think you just don't know in preseason what you got until you test it out. And so I think for, you know, Zach Orr and his defense, it's about, what do I have and what does it look like? And so that's going to help me formulate a plan as we go into the season.
Right. I agree with that entirely. And it doesn't necessarily have to be package based because one of the benefits you get of having a balanced roster of players by position on the 90 man is you've got a ton of players you've got to evaluate. And so you basically need all those inside linebacker snaps at two per play and all those defensive line snaps that you're planning on. And, you know, you need them for every position to evaluate. And you also don't care as much whether or not the player is slightly disadvantaged because that's an opportunity to test them in a live fire environment where the outcome doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because that's called competing. That's called, you know, playing football. I've heard this cliche line going back to when I played, like, just line up and play. And I'd be like, what do you mean? Well, you know what you mean when are you going to beat that DB when he's just in vanilla cover two or vanilla cover three or man to man? Are you going to win on a scheme if you are a D lineman? Like, are you going to do a TE or ET stunt or can you just whoop your guy that's right over in front of you? Those are, you know, the schemes. Sure, you want to, you know, do the psychological warfare during the regular season to give yourself every advantage. But in the preseason, whether it be joint practices, whether it be individual practices with your, you know, your team, inter-squad, or if it is a preseason game, it's all about the competition and, like, drinking from the fire hose. How well can you assimilate information? I'm going to give you a lot. What does it look like? How well can you adjust and adapt? I think that rules the roost more than scheme and personnel.
Yeah, great point there, by the way. And I asked a question of John last preseason because Atlanta had run a whole bunch of successful boot plays. I'll get to the punchline here very quickly. And in the first half, the Ravens edge defender who's responsible for going downhill on the quarterback very quickly, which is the it's the way to limit boot plays that, that are resulting in passes. Have that edge defender recognize the play quickly and work downhill. There's not much you can do except put that player in the position. Atlanta probably did the Ravens a favor to show them so many boot plays. 8 plays in the whole game, 6 in the first half. And to let the Ravens fail under those circumstances and then finally get it right by the second half. They went 1 for 6 in the first half and 2 for 2 in the second half. So they did get it right at some point during that game. But the reason I thought the question was good was when you really want to evaluate, is a player figuring out what he needs to do on any particular play, that's really an individual responsibility as the backside edge defender to be the guy coming downhill on the quarterback who's naked booty. So I thought that it was anyway, from that perspective, it's a reasonable thing. But at the same time, John said, I'm not really worried about their fit in scheme. I'm worried about how they, play individually.
You know, to that point, I was out at the Ravens training camp practice, and it was the day where they didn't have the fans because of the potential of the weather. And as I'm sitting there observing the defensive backs, one of the things that they were going over that I kind of smiled at, a few years back, the Ravens were really struggling in the red zone early in the year when teams were getting bunch formations. And in that bunch look, you can do a variety of things as far as route combinations. When you're in the red zone and there's a bunch formation, you as a defensive back, you're going to have to declare who's number one, who's number two, and who's number three. At the same time, my responsibility, if I'm the outside defensive back compared to the defensive back that's right over whoever is setting the bunch, I need to be in what they call levels. If you are even with the defense, if you are even with your teammate as a defender, that means it's going to be easy to get picks on you run into your guy when the bunch pass patterns are crossing one another. At the same time, if you're in levels, you still have to communicate and make sure that, hey, I have whomever is coming out. If it is the Y, if it is the Z, if it is the X, whoever is set on that line of scrimmage, or if it is the inside guy coming from in to out. And so when I was watching practice, they were meticulously going over that in the very beginning phases of it in the individual period. And so I know that from a preseason standpoint, it is the time to, you know, overly communicate details that are fundamental that you might not get to during the regular season. You're expected as a pro in the preseason going over things to carry over all the way into the depths of the season.
Great point, Cadre. And by the way, if there's nothing, probably I think one of the big things, let me say this, about watching film after the fact is to watch pre and post snap communication. And it'll often happen in bunch formation. You'll see a cornerback signal to either side what they're doing. And they think they're communicating very effectively. And yet, very frequently after the play, they'll be screaming at each other after a blown coverage because that communication either wasn't heard or wasn't understood by one party or the other.
Yeah, that's called choking. That's that fear that comes upon you. You can talk all you want, and that's where, you know, you get to know guys in the preseason. Like you could talk. I've seen it where I've listened to defensive backs, both when I retired, but even when I was an active player, and I would always just crack up laughing because just like the offensive guys are trying to learn and figure out what to do against a defense, especially if the quarterback calls an audible, the defensive backs, they're sitting there and they're trying to figure out what to do. And a guy could literally say, hey, you know, I'm pounding my fist together up and down. And that indicates, hey, they're stacked. But then he'll say, you know, he'll indicate that you know, he'll point to the defender that's closest to the sideline and tell that guy that, you know, he's got whoever's coming out at him. Well, the guy that's saying that, now all of a sudden, you know, the guy over the ball, he's going to release off the line. He'll occupy and he'll take an outside release. Well, the guy that's stacked takes an outside release too. Mm-hmm. But then you are thinking, well, okay, my guy who's close to the sideline, he's got that guy. But then the guy that's close to the sideline, he's like, no, you got that guy because that guy is now number two. I got number one, but number one goes back in. Number two comes out. You have a miscommunication because you're so caught in the rigidity rather than playing football and using common sense. The first maybe 2 yards, you got to assimilate so much information and then stay true to your keys. And it is easier said than done when you're sitting there on the sideline or from yours and my kin vantage point when we're, you know, 30,000 feet above looking down at them. But when you're in the thick of it between the lines, that gridiron, guys' bungholes pucker up and their mouths get really cotton mouth. And they're like, oh, God, I thought I had. And that's where you as an offense get the advantage over the defender.
All right. All right. Great stuff. Always love inside football. We get it from you whenever we get it from you, Q. Let's talk a little bit about deployment order in this game. Now, this is a big deal on the offensive line, but it's really a big deal at all positions because it gives you the best meaningful information about what the Ravens truly believe their depth chart to look like. It's not what the PR department put out, given a loose set of football operations rules that you always want to put the rookies at the bottom and, you know, such and this, but this is really what the coaches truly believe. So to start at cornerback, where on the outside, they started with Tampa and Kone and JAD in the slot. JAD was also in there on the base defense. So Kone was the one who came in as the third cornerback when they had the nickel and moved JAD to the inside. It's an interesting thing about that because JAD, honestly, pretty significant role in this game to be playing a versatile inside-outside role. That certainly has to help his chance to make the team.
So the more you can do is always been the mantra of guys trying to make the team. And for Jalen Armour Davis, you know, what is it? This is his, fourth year in the league.
Yep.
And all those other guys that you mentioned are young dudes. Well, if I can show the coaching staff that, you know what, you want some cornerback depth, let me go ahead and play slot. Let me go ahead and play, you know, in the nickel. Let me go ahead and play on the outside. You know, whatever you need from me, I'm going to show you that you can rely upon me because that's how he's going to get on the field. And so I was very impressed with him in the OTAs as well as mini camp. But now here in training camp, you know, he's kind of just going about his business. And so you throw him into the fire with regards to this first preseason game. And even in the joint practices, like, he's showing up. And so keep showing up. That's all I got to say on that. Like, keep showing up. Keep showing your versatility. Keep showing that, you know, when it comes to covering whomever, you're up to the task.
I think we'll get to this a little later when we talk about some individual players, but I think JAD took a huge step forward in terms of making this team in the game for multiple reasons that I think are worth delving into a little deeper. TJ Tampa, definitely one of the unsung heroes of the game, and maybe he's sung a little bit because he did have two pass defense in the game, but he played all 80 snaps defensively, which is, that's a hella long football game to be playing 80 defensive snaps.
I was impressed because if there was ever something to say in a negative, it is, well, technically he was nursing a lot of injuries, and so my biggest concern is his durability. And so for a young player, we again saw in the offseason, in the mini camps, in the early portions of training camp, him getting a lot of reps, but there's something about those game reps, and we want to really make sure, as far as the evaluation process of durability, what does it look like? Are you going to flinch, or are you going to be able to maintain and go ahead with those four quarters of football? I thought he did a fabulous job. What there was only the one shallow drag that wasn't technically a shallow, it was an intermediate drag across the field, but later in the game. But all the other plays, you know, they were in my mind not necessarily something to be alarmed at. He kept everything in front of him outside of that route that went across the field. But yeah, he played his part. And then at the same time, I know in John's presser, he talked about how he was impressed with him not giving up the one big play down the football field and was able to play good technique and read the receiver's eyes. I thought that was important too. So yeah, overall, good for his durability.
Yeah, that's a good point, because he relies more on that Brandon Stevens technique where he's not finding the football in the air. And that is a function of recovery speed and just where he is relative to the receiver a lot of the time. He's not as fast as Stevens. And so he's got even more to deal with in that regard. But he didn't pick up a DPI on either of those plays where he could have run right through the receiver. In fact, he picked up a PD on both those plays because the ball hit him on different parts of his body each time with him not looking for it.
Yeah, and see, that's the crazy thing about it. Like, the big picture is the big picture. How do you look under pressure? Can you make plays? You will improve. Like, they're going to go out there and practice again. They're going to be right back to the grind. This is a teaching moment, but you're still going to have to go up against DeAndre Hopkins. You're going to have to go up against D. Wade. You're going to have to go up against LaJonte, you're going to have to go up against, Bateman and Tez Walker again. And you're going to have to go up against those guys again. So, yes, you look good. Don't get comfortable. Okay? Go out there. Grow on this experience rather than getting comfortable thinking that you arrived.
Right. Well, I think that's good advice for anybody, certainly for Tampa after this game. And he's got real competition for the fifth corner spot right now with JAD. So that's playing time this year. You want to talk about here and now as opposed to later. But in addition for whether or not he actually stays at corner, I think that question has to come up after this game. I think he looked very comfortable coming downhill back towards the ball, looked very comfortable looking into the backfield. He's got the right size to play safety. And he's frankly got the right speed to play safety. He's a little short on speed at corner. So guys like Worley, who moved there and ended up having a fairly productive career playing safety, it made a lot of sense for with Tampa. It wasn't that he had a bad game. He played well overall. He was involved directly in those punt returns. I don't know if we really want to hit on that, but I'm happy with how it turned out for him at corner, but I think that there's still a lot that kind of concerns me about his performance from this game in terms of projecting something good to happen this year for him at corner.
So I'm going to withhold judgment because what I saw in camp and what I saw in the offseason when they had allowed the media to view practices, he was going stride for stride with some fast guys. And the Ravens have some fast receivers. He was holding his own as far as sinking his hips and coming out of breaks when they were making, deep cuts as far as comeback routes and deep ends. So I'm a whole judgment. I know what you're saying, but again, the bigger picture of it all is where I'm going to sit back and be like, all right, we'll see. There's more. Again, that's the beauty of the preseason, is that guys like him can continue to build his case of the why. And I think for the durability factor, the why, you check that box. For special teams factor, you definitely check that box because he was playing it in game last year, and he was a gunner, and he had to hold up the gunner. And those are two speed positions and hard positions, and he did that. But I think now, again, they were just looking at the film. There were one or two plays, you know, again, like the shallow drag. In my mind, you know, he probably could have played a little bit better leverage, but yeah, I don't see it where I'm pressing any panic button, nor am I trying to say he can't do it.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. 96 total snaps for Tampa. He was second on the team in special team snaps with 16, in addition to 80 defensive snaps. So I think the only number I've heard higher in recent years is that 102 game out of Darrell Worley against, I think it was the Colts a couple of years ago. Might have been the loss in 23 early in the season. All right, let me go through this, some of this a little bit quicker. At cornerback, we had Tampa and JAD playing together. Then Martin moved into the stock. Keon Martin, we'll talk a little bit about him later, I think. Then we had Tampa and Robinson on the outside. Marquise Robinson, I think, a little underappreciated for what he accomplished in this game, but we can maybe hit on him a little later. And, of course, JAD and Martin were the two slot cornerbacks. That takes us through the whole game at corner. Anything is surprising about the order of entry or how the Ravens seem to have their totem pole depth chart set up?
You know, not really. I think it was kind of just standard operating procedure, you know, based upon what we've seen in camp. All of them, you know, they got their opportunities. I a little bit surprised that, you know, TJ played all those snaps. But again, when you look back on it, you can see where, like, I'm watching a game and deep into the fourth quarter, and I was like, oh, wait, that's 2-7. Oh, wow, he's still out there. So, yeah, whether it be, I guess, because of Kone's injury, potentially. But then again, I don't really know if that was the game plan, regardless of the injury. But, yeah, I think if I'm if I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, well, if I'm longer beam and Robinson, well, I'm next man up mentality. Let me go out there and make the best of.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The opportunities that I've been given.
Of course, Longerbeam didn't play. He's been hurt. He missed two critical days here this week between the joint practice and the actual game against the Colts. It's a setback for him, no matter how you look at it. And a guy who the Ravens probably had hopes could be a versatile inside-outside guy.
So that's interesting, too, because the durability factor is what coaches look at if you can be dependable and dependent on. So there's a miss. So therefore, you're looking at a scenario where, okay, one guy went down. Obviously, Kone is gone for the year, but I'm his agent. I'm like, bro, what are we doing? What do we need to do to show that they don't need to bring in other guys? Because I promise you, today, tomorrow, they are absolutely working out multiple corners. We, the media, we might not be able to see it, but they're bringing in people, making sure that they're not going to be caught shorthanded.
Right. Right. And that makes sense. You got some better guys available, some better younger guys available. As we know, the replacement level attrits downward or goes downward during the regular season as cornerbacks are injured and lost for the year in particular. It's one of the sharpest declining positions. So in December, the cornerbacks on the street's not very good. Right now, there's still some good players out there on the street that the Ravens could choose from.
True indeed. And so while I don't have that list in front of me, I will say that, you know, it's a battle of attrition. It's one of those scenarios where agents are calling. You know that you're looking at video and film and seeing who is able to come in, and now you're poking and prodding. The poking and prodding, what I mean by that is that are you in shape? Are you ready to play? Can you come right on in? And what does it look like if you do come right on in to play? So I think those are things that, you know, you can never sit back and think, oh, woe is me. But rather, okay, let me take advantage of this opportunity.
In your journey through the NFL, you must have had to, I know you went a couple of years without a reception at one point. You had to be at some point on the street and looking for work, right? And go in for such workouts? Or were you always signed before the season?
No, I wasn't that. No. So for me, what the 2 years, what I called my wilderness experience. So it was a scenario where I had to learn how to be a pro. And what I mean by that, when I was in Minnesota, I was a third wide receiver in a three wide receiver offense. But see, there's the details of how do you get better? And so getting better is doing extra work. What does extra work mean? For me, I had issues with my vision. And so therefore, my depth perception, my peripheral vision, I had to do an awful lot of sports vision therapy to help me improve upon my eye-hand coordination. But there were also details as far as watching extra film, understanding how to route run, understanding how to be available for the quarterback. What does full speed in practice truly mean? Those are little details that I just took for granted. You know, the vision therapy I was honed in on, but everything else I just took for granted. And so when I became a free agent, I signed with the Green Bay Packers. They just came off of a Super Bowl. They had a really good, you know, roster that was a strong, young receiving core. And Robert Brooks and Antonio Freeman were their two top dogs. They had some other guys that were good, strong role players. And then there was me. And I don't think I fully – I was just in a comfort zone in Minnesota. And so, you know, I was traded because I had a really good game against the Jimmy Johnson head coach led Miami Dolphins. Had a really good preseason game in front of him and his staff. So I think when it came down to them needing depth at receiver, well, off I went. But also off I went was, and this is something that even to today, like the littlest of things you take for granted. Like, so there are going to be guys that are going to go in there and Kone's position is up for an opportunity for somebody to come in and sign with the Ravens. But you also recognize, well, okay, how do I get to the facility? Okay, where is the team hotel? Well, how do we do things? Well, is this coach, you know, what's his personality like? Is he a teacher or a yeller? Those are things that you just on the outside, us on the outside, we just think that it's easy to assimilate, and it's not. And the person that, or the team, I should say, that can help a guy assimilate himself into the culture of the locker room, into the details of where things are, that team will get the best out of that player because that player won't be distracted. And so my big picture for me wasn't that I was a street free agent. I never was. When I went from Miami, I signed the following offseason with the New Orleans Saints. And so trying out for them was just a free agent because I signed a one-year deal with Miami. But it's, again, it's that 2 year of, shoot, I gotta be a pro. What does being a pro mean? And that's a big statement. Once you get it, you gotta capture it. And I think for whomever they bring in, they gotta capture it. And I think, you know, and that is so interesting too, Ken, because this is why I'm not caught up in this whole, well, you know, the salary cap and the, well, you know, let's see if, you know, the youth and or the young, because yeah, you think you have all your ducks in a row, but things change moment to moment. And that's where the one who can adapt the best, that's the team or organization or coaching staff or players, they're the ones that are going to win because they can adapt. And so that's something that, I think I've realized over the years of covering the game, there is always going to be that battle of attrition. There's always going to be some contract dispute. You know, what is it like and how do they overcome it? That to me really dictates the hidden wins and losses for a team.
Okay, let's move on here. We really need to talk about the 2025 Ravens again in the preseason. Look at the safety position. Kane, I think we'd agree, has kind of separated himself as the third safety on this team, something they didn't have figured out going into, I think, the offseason. They may have thought they knew who could win it, but I don't think they really had it figured out. But Kane and Starks started the game. So Malachi got some playing time. Then Kane and Braid played. So Kane ended up playing the entire first half. And then the camp darling, Reuben Lowry, came in the second half, played the entire second half, 42 snaps. He played some with Braid, some with Keandre Jackson, and some with Desmond Igbinosun. Interesting mix of players with there, but I'd say the key point about here is that it really magnified, you know, what the Ravens believe in Lowry. Very intelligent young kid and mechanical engineering degree. The Ravens certainly have a type in that way of really liking safeties who can learn the playbook quickly. One of my theories is they probably like Starks a lot more for that. They said they loved him from the interview. It's easy to see why. But Lowry, you know, an interesting profile and a player who's clearly got some additional playing time because of it in this second half of this first game.
Football intelligence. Can you understand the defense? Can you put yourself in position? I thought he did. I thought, you know, there were times where in camp I also saw he was, yeah, you know, breaking some of the thump. I know some of the running backs, I was sitting there and I was like, man, this is a thud period. And if I'm Marcus Major Jr. and you come up and thud me like that, like, we fighting. And so at the same time, I think, you know, for Lowry to not only be football intelligent, but also be able to show his physicality, I think he earned the right to play.
Yeah. So we got a good roster battle going on. I think Kane has certainly made the team, but I consider it a real question whether Lowry or Braid is going to be the fourth safety or whether the team may actually find a way to carry five. They've got a little bit of variability there, but, you know, if they want to carry six outside linebackers, that might really make their safety choice one where they only have to keep four. So they've got some choices to make. That I know you don't want to dig too deep into the weeds on these general manager topics, but that's my bet. Don't call it meaningless. So
No. I get what you're saying.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about the outside linebackers. Great first half from the big three, who two of them are in one of the legendary camp battles. This could go back to Kelly Gregg and Dwayne Missouri, for my money, the best Ravens camp battle of all time in that 2001 season. But David Ajabo and Adisa Isaac already are fairly engaged now in this. The battle is, what do you call it, duly joined or whatever it's called, but between those two. And they both had a sack within the first period. And meanwhile, Mike Green is looking like he is Gumby out there moving around on the edge and getting pressures. So very exciting time for the Ravens pass rush.
I absolutely think this is the battle of battles, and I absolutely love it, and I'm here for it. David Ajabo, he looked like Bart Scott sacking Big Ben against Richardson. I think it is hilarious to me how it came about. Anthony Richardson, I'm assuming he thought, hey, okay, looking at the line, his right side, he had his tight end to that side. You just had a linebacker and a rush end on that side. So Trenton Simpson and Ajabo both there. I don't know what the protection scheme was, but the tight end just free released off the line, and the tackle decided to sit inside, which is technique wise is good, but I don't know if they were, if they had they should have had a better call, and they should have fanned the tackle out to the rush in, and then the guard fan out to Trenton Simpson. But credit David Ajabo, because he's like, okay, you're not going to touch me, not a problem. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to eat. And so he did. And that was one heck of a sack. I absolutely loved it. I'm sure Anthony Richardson is sitting there like, mother of pearl, what the heck just happened?
There was comments about this by Shane Steichen after the game. There's a five-man protection. That was the hot side. And effectively, he's saying Richardson needs to recognize that and get the ball out quickly.
Good. I'm glad that clarification was there, because that just shows that Richardson has not been paying attention. That is football 101. The very terminology, when you go and call the play, you'll know what the protection is, whether it be scat protection, scram protection, or max, some level of max protection. And those are terms that going back years. So who knows what Shane Steichen's terminology is, but you know, as soon as you call scat, well, okay, there's only five men. Let me go to the line of scrimmage. Okay, this guy's a hot. And I'm making sure, because they had his tight end right there. I'd have made sure, like, that that guy comes off the end. And I think that was Tyler. Was that Tyler Warren? Man, I'd have been like, hey, rookie, hey, listen to me. I like you. You like me. You're a talented dude. You're about to be my go-to guy. I'm getting the ball out of my hands. So that's on good. I'm glad that was a clarification. That's on him.
Yeah, it was a good play by Ajabo. And what I really liked about the play was how clean it was, that he went in, and it was like what they teach kids how to tackle, heads up tackling. Okay. Which means he didn't take any chance of getting a helmet under the chin of Richardson or any of that other crap that could have caused the sack to be removed and replaced with a roughing the passer flag. It was just a beautiful, clean, hard hit. And I don't think he really went all out to drop his weight on Richardson after the fact, which would have been another problem, but just it was beautiful. That said, Ajabo was given a pretty much a gift there by Richardson's inattentiveness. And I one of the things I wonder about him on that play was, did he just read the play off his wristband directly without really thinking about what all those words meant?
So that is embarrassing because, like, I'm recalling a scheme that, goodness gracious, Train right, scat right, 383, Y stick, Z takeoff, M. So now I just told the back what to do. I told the scat is the protection. I'm going to go to the line of scrimmage. I mean, heck, that's just off the top of my dome. I better know the protection. I'm the quarterback. Dang it. You got it on your wristband. You should probably have it categorized. I'm sure you got it categorized. If it's, you know, the different schemes, like, man, that speaks to the low IQ rather than high IQ. We're talking to Ruben Lowry having a high IQ. Mm-hmm. Talk about low IQ with Anthony Richardson. If you just kind of zoned out and just read a play and thought, okay, I know who I'm going to throw the football to, rather than like, okay.
I mean, I think Steichen's got him right in the crosshairs by saying he didn't do what he was supposed to do pre-snap to reset a protection or to understand what the protection was, or he didn't do what he was supposed to do post-snap, which is read the blitz coming off the edge. And I was actually, it wasn't really a blitz. They were both, you know, just standing up there to get the ball out hot. But either way, I think it's Richardson's fault. And it wouldn't surprise me if he made a mistake directly reading off the wristband in terms of what he understood about that play.
That's sad. It really is. That you're my quarterback, and this is preseason, and it's vanilla looking. That's not how you win over your teammates. And again, that's not winning football. Therefore, from a bigger picture standpoint, you can psychologically lose a team, which means that pretty much Shane Steichen is going to be fired. You're that one play can cost coaches jobs, literally.
They have a real backup quarterback there in Daniel Jones too, so it could cost Richardson his job. I mean, Richardson is, you know, he's a third overall draft pick at a point in the past. But this is, I mean, they've got an alternative. If Richardson does a few more boneheaded things like that, you know, he could be literally outside looking in.
Well, Daniel Jones wasn't much better, but you're right. He has way more quote unquote game time, real life experience of being in the fire and trying to navigate everything. Yes, I know money wise, they paid him more money. They paid him starter like money. So Anthony Richardson, in his mind, he better. I did not know that. That's why I'm sitting here. I'm just stunned because I cannot tell you how football 101 that is. That's like a receiver, you know, running a hitch route as opposed to running something else that's more a little more complex, like an option route. And that's all you had to do, and you didn't do it, and you ran it deep.
It's a basic line of scrimmage quarterback checklist item to understand that, whether or not you forgot from the whatever you read off your wristband was. It's really something you need to know by the time that football is snapped.
Period. End of discussion. Like there is no tomorrow. You gotta know it now. I mean, you got the dude coming on that, you know, on off the edge. Like that's you hurt yourself. As a matter of fact, I think he injured his pinky or whatever, is something on his digits.
His pinky.
There you go. Okay, so that's on you, bro. Now you flying back to Indianapolis in pain. My finger is swelled up because I didn't recognize what I needed to recognize, and that's nobody else's fault but my own.
All right, let's move on a little bit. Outside linebackers got a quarter to look at Rucker and Ham. Ham, a Baltimore boy, made a great play on the intentional grounding. Unfortunately, didn't make a good play on holding the left edge, the offensive left edge, on a play. That was a vulnerability that happened to a couple of the outside linebackers, to Rucker as well. Rucker really showed some pass rush juice, I thought, on that last drive. Getting in for a couple quarterback hits and one other pressure, I think I had him for as well.
So I appreciated the scheme of what they did. Remember, we, you know, talked earlier just about from a scheme aspect of things, the way in which sometimes in a preseason you keep it vanilla. Well, when you look at the tape, you were like, wow, you guys are stunting like crazy. And so, you know, Rucker, again, especially when you call in stunts, you better know the technique, but you also better execute the stunt itself. And I think that was one of the reasons why you're impressed with him. And I think that's a tip of the cap. That's a tip of the cap. And that's good for him. Again, a lot more football left. This is going to be a bigger week, you know, to build on, but that's good stuff.
All right, we'll look quickly at the other positions. Inside linebacker, tons of mixing and matching between the 2, 3, and 4 inside linebackers. Roquan, of course, had the night off, but Simpson, Buchanan, and the special teams ace Hummel all got to play with each other. Excuse me. Then Buchanan took over with Cuenco in the beginning of the second half. This was what surprised me. Cuenco only played, I think it was 9 or 10 snaps on the game. It's one of those two. And then he came out. I'm wondering, I did not hear of an injury, but I wonder if there was one. Because Martin came in and it seemed like Cuenco would have had a more extended trial. And then Martin and Higgins came in and they both were dominant in that final quarter and a half or so of football. Those guys just took over the game.
Yeah, they did. Was it Higgins who had the interception? Mm-hmm. Well, again, like I know I got caught up in Ajabo, but I think, you know, when you look at the way in which that defensive front played, you know, Higgins better go ahead and thank Ravenel and some of his other boys up front. Because was it Riley Leonard? Riley was running for his life and he had some happy feet. I mean, I think all three quarterbacks had happy feet. Like, let's not, you know, beat around the bush. That defensive front played tremendous. And so linebacker wise, I thought Trent Simpson, you know, there's a couple of times he fitted up in there. I guess, you know, what people were saying was that was it Teddy Buchanan who had the green dot? The green dot indicates who is going to get the
people know play. Who listened to the show. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And that being said, like, Teddy had it and Trenton didn't. That just goes to a young player kind of having some heads up flow to his game. But I also thought that Teddy played a little apprehensive. He didn't play as free flowing. And I wonder if it was because of just having that responsibility, similar to Anthony Richardson, as far as, you know, having a play call and not realizing a basic protection. Like, in my mind, I'm wondering if it was, all right, what's the play call? Okay. All right, I'm going to call out the play. And then now you're like, all right, oh, this is my assignment, as opposed to just free-flowing and knowing. So something to kind of file away in the back of our minds. But, I thought the linebackers as a core played well. I thought Jay Higgins showed out by being in position because of the guys up front creating pressure and not allowing the quarterback just to sit back and sling the ball.
Yeah. Well, you're right to compare it to the Ajabo moment, because it's similar in a lot of ways. It was a kind of an unforced error. Ajabo got a free run of the quarterback. Higgins is way out in space. There's no one within 7 yards of him when he makes that interception. And all of a sudden the ball came right to him as if the quarterback thought that was an empty, you know, spot on the field. You rarely see that. Maybe he was actually trying to elevate the ball to the sideline and didn't get out of there. But I agree. It was the pressure directed that outcome.
It did. And that's something that, again, you know, we could look at bigger picture wise with Zach Orr and obviously what, you know, Eric DaCosta, I'm sure, needed to kind of do when, you know, you're sitting there talking to John Harbaugh and talking meetings, like, what can we do to bolster our defense? And part of it is, what if we just rush four, and in rushing four, we get to the quarterback. Let's get some dogs that can go out there and they just get after it. And I think there were a couple of times in those different pressure looks where they were rushing four, and they, you know, however you want to disguise it at the beginning of the snap, but the fact that they were able to go out there and play the way they were able to play by only rushing for that to me said an awful lot as far as the talent and the assimilation of information mentally with that talent.
Yeah, they definitely, they, one thing, even though they play the packages, which are very vanilla, they definitely are not vanilla at all about the pass rush. And part of that is just, you want to get these guys experience. So work out of the regular base packages, but juice up the blitzes however you like. And I'm not denying for a moment that they try to stay with a four-man rush a lot, but it's often a four with a drop. And if you look at the pass rush snaps that each of them take, there's a fair number in there. Like Malachi Starks came on a blitz and got a pressure, and they got pass rushers from Bo Braid. They got Keon Martin brushed the passer three times in the game from the slot. That's something obviously the Ravens like to do. But I like. They always work from the base packages in these games, but they were, you know, base or nickel, but they do juice it up in terms of scheme, showing people at the line of scrimmage with that simulated pressure or blitzing from off ball, whether that means as far out as the slot or from linebacker or safety.
That's that what Kyle Hamilton calls a nameless, faceless defense. And that's just classic, you know, whether obviously now Zach Orr has the mantle of defense coordinator, but you know, Mike McDonald to Wink Martindale, it doesn't matter. You know, Zach Orr now, you know, you that nameless faceless is like, all right, we're coming to the line of scrimmage. Guys that are a little bit more savvier than Anthony Richardson, they're going to be like, well, who's coming? And the quarterbacks in today's game outside of Anthony Richardson are way more smarter when it comes to figuring out who is what when they look at the percentages. But what if you can break some of those tendencies, and that's what gives this Ravens defense such an edge? Because, yeah, you're right. They do go to the line of scrimmage, and it does look like it's something vanilla, and then all of a sudden, you get a linebacker dropping, or you get a Michael Pierce dropping in one of the final games, and he's picking it off and he's going back the other way.
All right. Great stuff, Kadri. We're going to come back in part two and talk a lot more about some other uncovered depth, in particular, I think, at the nose tackle position in this game. But we'll do that in part two. Kadri, thanks so much for coming on. Where can people contact you if they want to talk football with you?
Yeah, it is easy. So from my podcast that I've been on consistently is Locked On Ravens with myself and Kevin Allstriker. They can certainly join in on that, as well as we have a new podcast, myself, Kevin Allstriker, Sam and Joku. We all have teamed up to formulate the squad. And the squad, we will break down every Ravens game afterwards, as well as we'll have a weekly. We've been doing a weekly podcast. And those are places where they can check me out, as well as TV, WJZ, my Purple pregame show. We technically, when there's a Ravens home game, we'll be out at Jimmy's famous tailgoat. So come on out and interact with us. And it'll be a lot of fun.
And you are I Am Kadri on Twitter, right? I Am Kadri Ismail or I Am Kadri?
I Am Kadri Ismail on Twitter. And certainly you will be seeing me have a flurry of tweets and all the things. If you are what I call a Lamarite, which is a person that doesn't know anything about football and says some dumb stuff, then go ahead and just speed bump right over my tweets, because it's not going to make sense to you. and you're probably going to get offended about something that is the smarter fan is going to know. But if you ain't that smart fan, then please just go ahead and speed bump right over me. Don't even follow me. Just keep on going.
That's all right. Send some followers to the sideline. There you go. Bench him. Bench him, Kyle. Yes. All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, if you like and subscribe, that'll help the show and drive the program to more listeners. Really do appreciate every one of you. And I want to say this once before the season starts. I appreciate that the show can be accepted at the level it is for the technical aspects we bring here. I really do appreciate that you guys are outstanding fans and analysts of the game in a lot of cases, and take the time to listen to this. It's much longer content. It's definitely a lot deeper, and I really appreciate you as an audience. And I need to make sure I do not take that for granted. Kadri, thanks a lot for coming on.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.